From the towering Wasatch Mountains of the American Southwest, we welcome you to this episode of Undiscovered Utah. This show focuses on the mysteries that surround the rugged, difficult, and sometimes deadly American Southwest. I'm filling in for JB this episode, and you can call me Rue. Tonight we are going to talk about one of the most iconic outlaws of the Old West, Robert Leroy Parker. Who? Let me tell you something. In the mid-1800s, missionaries of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints were actively proselyting in the United Kingdom. After listening to the missionaries, many people in England and the surrounding countries decided the famous story of a young boy, Joseph Smith, in his work in the restoration of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints was something they desperately wanted to be a part of. Many of these early members of the church in the United Kingdom sold almost everything they had and moved to the United States, and over time made that long trip out west to Utah. There were two families that did just that, the Parkers and the Gillies. The Parkers had a son by the name of Maximilian. Maximilian was born in 1844. The Gillies family lived in Tinsdale, England. They had a daughter by the name of Anne, who was born in 1845. The Parkers arrived in Utah in 1856, when Maximilian was 12 years old. The Gillies arrived in Utah in 1859, when Anne was 14 years old. Somehow, these two kids, who had both sailed across the Atlantic and then traveled across the United States, ran into each other, became friends, and fell in love. They were married in July of 1865. Maximilian and Anne lived in Beaver, Utah. While living in Beaver, they had their first child, a boy that they named Robert Leroy Parker, was born on April 13, 1866. Then, in 1879, the Parker family moved from Beaver, over the Tushar Mountains, to the small town of Circleville, Utah. The Parker family went on to have 13 kids and owned a small cattle ranch just outside Circleville. As you can imagine, a family with 13 kids living on a small ranch didn't have much money. At the age of 13, Robert Leroy left his home to work for other ranchers in the area so he could make money to help support his family. Young boys at the age of 13 tend to make a few bad decisions, particularly when they are working as a ranch hand and not living at home. Robert Leroy rode his horse all the way into town. By the time he got to town, the local general store was closed. He saw a new pair of overalls that he really wanted, and kinda needed. So he found a way into the store, took the overalls, and left a note that promised that he would return and pay for the overalls. When the owner of the store arrived the next day and he saw the note, he was not impressed. The store owner called the sheriff and had the 13-year-old Robert Leroy arrested. Kind of a jerk move by the store owner. After all, the kid left a note with his name on it. The sheriff later let Robert Leroy go, but this experience left a lasting negative impact on the young boy. Robert continued working on area ranches and sending money home to his family. In the early 1880s, Robert Leroy met another ranch hand by the name of Mike Cassidy. Robert Leroy really looked up to old Mike, and Mike took Robert Leroy under his wing. He taught him how to break and train horses and how to shoot a gun. Old Mike Cassidy was more than just a ranch hand. He was also a small-time cattle rustler and had gotten into trouble with the law. The law was hunting down old Mike, so he quickly left the ranch and Robert Leroy behind. When Robert Leroy turned 18 years old, he also left the ranch he was working for and headed out of Utah. Robert Leroy Parker went to Telluride, Colorado to try his hand at mining. After all, there was a mining boom going on at the time, and he seemed like a good way to earn some real money. He made a little money in Telluride, but nothing like he had hoped. After Telluride, he went to try mining in Wyoming, and then Montana. The money was hard to come by. Most of the money from mining goes to the mine owners, and the workers get very little. The work was very hard and dangerous. Robert Leroy didn't mind the hard work. From the time he was a young boy, he learned a strong work ethic from his parents, but he felt like the money situation with the mines was not fair. After Montana, Robert Leroy went back to Telluride and met some new friends with colorful stories and colorful pasts. While staying in Telluride, it didn't take Robert Leroy long to realize that San Miguel Bank always followed the same routine with their money. Robert Leroy decided it was just too easy. He talked to his new friends, some of whom were well-established outlaws, and told them his plan to rob the bank. On June 24th, 1889, the bank was robbed. With Robert Leroy as the leader of the band, they made off with $20,000 in cold, hard cash. Not long after the bank robbery, Robert Leroy decided it was necessary to go by a different name. He did not want to stain the good name of his family, so he took the name of his former friend and mentor. Robert Leroy Parker would for a short time be known as Roy Cassidy. Roy moved to Rock Springs, Wyoming, and got a job at a local butcher shop. He was very friendly and was well liked by the locals. The locals soon started to refer to Roy as Butcher Cassidy. Roy kind of liked the name, so he changed his first name to Butch. While in Wyoming, Butch purchased some land and started a little ranch. Then in 1894, Butch Cassidy was sentenced to 2 years in the Wyoming State Penitentiary. You see, he was charged with stealing a $5 horse and found guilty. 2 years for a $5 horse? Are you kidding me? Butch knew he had been set up by some area cattleman that didn't want him as competition. By now, Butch Cassidy had little to no faith in the legal system. It was rumored that the governor of Wyoming made a deal with Cassidy that he would let him out of prison on good behavior if he promised to leave his ranch behind and leave Wyoming. Butch Cassidy went back to Utah and started working as a ranch in Browns Park, Utah. Browns Park is near the border with Utah, Colorado, and Wyoming. It is located in a small valley between the Green River and the Uinta Mountains. Even today, it's not an easy place to get to. Back then, it was a perfect place for outlaws to hide from the law and make some extra money as cowboys and ranch hands. It was there that Butch met a man by the name of William Ellsworth Lay, who went by the name Elsie. They became the best of friends. Butch and Elsie went to the Utah-Arizona border, and there they met some of Butch's friends from Telluride. In the group of Rough Riders, you had Butch Cassidy himself, Elsie Lay, Dick Maxwell, Henry Wilbur, Bob Meeks, who was also at one time a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, George Curry, and Harry Longabow, also known as the Sundance Kid. This was a wild bunch of men, and they loaded their gear up and all headed back up north, cut the corner of Wyoming by Evanston, and followed the Bear River to the shores of Bear Lake. Here, they put the final touches on their first bank job by the infamous Wild Bunch. Montpelier, Idaho is located just north of Bear Lake, and Montpelier had the first bank in southeast Idaho. It was established in 1891 by G.C. Gray. At this time, one of Butch's other good friends, a man by the name of Matt Warner. Now, JB told you a little about Matt Warner in episode 10 when we were talking about the northern section of the San Rafael Swell. Well, Matt Warner was in jail, and Butch thought the Montpelier could help pay the bail for his friend. On the evening of August 13th, 1896, Butch, Elsie, and Bob Meeks were casually enjoying a few drinks. Then they got on their horses and slowly walked them down the street toward the bank of Montpelier. They tied up their horses to a hitching post that was directly across the street from the bank. The bank was just about to close for the day, and the cashier was the owner, G.C. Gray. Mr. Gray was standing on the outside step of the bank and had seen the men ride up and tie up their horses, but didn't think too much about it, as that was very normal behavior. And the normal behavior was a big part of all Butch's plans. Mr. Gray and one of his friends, Mr. Hoover, engaged in friendly conversations in front of the bank as the workday was quickly coming to an end. Butch and Lay nonchalantly moseyed across the street while Meeks stayed near the horses. Butch and Lay greeted Mr. Gray and Mr. Hoover with a good evening and a smile. Then they showed them their somewhat concealed handguns and invited them to enter the bank with them. Inside the back was a man by the name of A.N. McIntosh and a girl who, with the two men from outside, were asked to get up and face the walls. Lay leaned over the counter with his handgun pointed at them, while Butch quickly grabbed money and shoved it into a sack. With McIntosh's face pressed up against the wall, he could see out the window while the robbery was unfolding, and noticed a third man out by the horses. McIntosh studied Bob's face and everything else he could remember about him. Just then, Lay smacked McIntosh across the face. Butch, with the money bag in hand once again, calmly walked across the street and got on his horse and rode away. Lay was still in the bank with his gun focused on his captives. Bob Meeks quietly untied his horse and then Lay's horse and walked them across the street in front of the bank building. Meeks got on his horse and rode away. All that was left was Lay. Lay shouted one last threat and ran out of the bank and jumped on his horse. All hell broke loose as Lay bolted out of town. News of the robbery spread through town like a last summer fire in tall grass. Deputy Fred Cruikshank was the first to give chase. He jumped on his bike and started to pedal as fast as he could. Seriously, I'm not making this up. When he finally ditched the bike and got on a horse, he was joined by the town's attorney, Mr. Bagley. Not far behind them was Sheriff Jefferson Davis and a quickly organized posse. The posse tracked the outlaws for a week, but lost the trail near Snyder Basin, Wyoming, which is high in the mountains northeast of Montpelier, Idaho. Mr. McIntosh later stated that he was confident all of this happened because it was the 13th of August, 13 minutes after the hour. The 13th deposit was just made for that day in the amount of $13. It was Mr. McIntosh's description that led to the eventual arrest of Bob Meeks. It is rumored that the three men acquired just over $7,000. After this robbery, the Wild Bunch started to build a reputation. Butch headed east to Iowa and then on to Michigan before coming back to Utah and reuniting with his gang to plan what might go down as their greatest robbery. Eastern Utah is a coal country. There are coal mines everywhere, and these mines have been active for many decades. Price, Utah is the center of coal country and is also the county seat for Carbon County. To the north of Price are some small communities by the names of Carbonville, Spring Glen, Kenilworth, and Helper. Helper got its name from the trains that would load up with coal and have to climb up the steep mountains to Soldier Summit before dropping down into Utah County. And the small mining and railroad town Helper engines would be added to the trains to help them climb the steep grades. This town was called Helper because of the Helper engines. When you leave Helper headed north, the road follows the Price River and the Union Pacific Rail Line. Soon, you come to one of my favorite landmarks in all of Utah, Castle Gate. Castle Gate was two huge cliff walls that the river and road cut through. The two walls looked like a gigantic castle gate as you approached from the town of Helper. Today, only one of the castle gate walls is fully intact as the other wall was destroyed to widen Highway 6. Highway 6 was one of the most deadly roads in the nation at one time. There was a small coal mining town called Castle Gate that was relocated to Helper when the road was widened. Butch Cassidy had many friends in the Price area, including Matt Warner. On April 21st, 1897, Butch Cassidy and the Wild Bunch robbed the Pleasantville Coal Company payroll in broad daylight. The Salt Lake Herald ran the story the day after the robbery as told by E.L. Carpenter, the cashier for the Pleasant Valley Coal Company. According to the paper, Cassidy and Lay waited outside of the main building of the Pleasant Valley Coal Company beneath the stairs that led up into the higher entrance of the building. The outlaws soon confronted Carpenter and another employee, ordering the workers to drop them sacks and hold up your hands. Once the money had been handed over, one of the outlaws began whirling a six-shooter in his hand and firing shots promiscuously to create consternation. Cassidy and Lay rode toward Helper and Price, cutting the telegraph wires as they went. However, one message got through to the local sheriff. Sheriff Donnett quickly organized a posse of four men and headed out after the outlaws. Cassidy and Lay headed into the San Rafael Swell and then on to Robber's Roost and lost the posse. The robbery made all the papers, and I don't mean just in Utah. Papers all over the country were printing varied versions of the robbery, some of which were very imaginative. Susan Spano of the Los Angeles Times wrote that E.L. Carpenter chased the robbers in a locomotive detached from the rest of its train. The Castle Gate robbery was the Wild Bunch's only robbery in the state of Utah. After this, the Wild Bunch hit banks and trains all over the Southwest, from North Dakota to Nevada. They were collecting a good sum of money, like the Rio Grande Railroad robbery in Folsom, New Mexico, where they netted an estimated $70,000. By this time, the bounties on their head were almost as much as the amount they were getting away with. And with large bounties come lawmen, bounty hunters, and the Pinkerton National Detective Agency. Out of all these, it was the Pinkertons that seemed to be right on Cassidy's heels all the time. The gang reportedly came back to Utah in 1900 and asked Governor Heber Wells for amnesty if they gave up their evil ways. But that didn't go over so well with the governor, so they rode west across the Great Salt Lake Desert into Nevada and robbed the Winnemucca Bank. In 1902, the Wild Bunch was being hunted aggressively and began to disband for their own safety. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid and Sundance's girlfriend, Etta Place, all went back east to lay low. Then they went to England and then to Argentina. When they purchased a small ranch, they were committed to settle down and live a normal life. Then one day, a stock buyer from the States came to Argentina to buy cattle. It just so happened that this stock buyer was a retired lawman from Wyoming that had many run-ins with Butch many years ago and knew he was a very wanted man. Soon, word was all over Argentina of who exactly these two cattlemen were. In 1969, 20th Century Fox released a movie starring Paul Newman as Butch Cassidy and Robert Redford as the Sundance Kid. This movie was a box office smash. The movie ends with a terrific shout-out with law enforcement in Bolivia. End of story. Well, maybe not. William Phillips came to the United States from Europe. William went to Michigan, where he met and fell in love with Gertrude Livesay. The two were married in May of 1908, and they moved to Arizona. Phillips fought with Pancho Villa in the Mexican Revolution. And then he and his wife moved to Spokane, Washington, and founded the Phillips Manufacturing Company. But things got tough in the late 1920s as the Great Depression set in. Phillips was nearly bankrupt. Phillips traveled to Utah, where he spent a significant amount of the time looking for hidden caches of money in the San Rafael Swell. You see, he had once buried gold and silver coins all over the Colorado Plateau when he rode with a bunch of men called the Wild Bunch under the alias of Butch Cassidy. Butch Cassidy wrote, "The best way to hurt them is through their pocketbook. They all holler louder than if you cut off both legs. I steal their money just to hear them holler. Then I pass it out among those who really need it." Robert Leroy Parker died in July 20th, 1937. I hope you have enjoyed this episode of Undiscovered Utah. Join JB next week as he shares more about the Great Southwest. Good night, everybody.